Case and Cure of a Deserted Soul by Joseph Simmons. Chapter 23. The fifth means of retaining God's quickening presence is by laboring to keep yourself in God's way. Fifth, take this direction. Keep yourselves in God's way, or else you cannot expect his help. Thou meetest him that rejoiceth and worketh righteousness, those that remember thee in thy ways. Isaiah 64, verse 5. Here are two things to be carefully observed. Number one, that the things which we undertake are good, so that we may pray as David. Hold up my goings in thy paths, that my footsteps slip not. Psalm 17, verse 5. To ask for his aid in an evil action is to provoke him. It is a high indignity, drawing the great God into a cursed confederacy with sinful man against himself. Number two, the things which we undertake must be such as we are called unto. If, out of rashness and folly, or pride and vainglory, we thrust ourselves into actions or difficulties without warrant or command, we may miss our aim if we think to be carried through with a divine hand. Question. How may a man know when he is called to such a work? Answer. Number one. Some actions are tied and appropriated to an office, as administration of sacraments to a minister, execution of justice to a magistrate, and so forth. Concerning this, take these rules. Number one. Ordinarily, no man is called to the work of an office which is not called to the office. Therefore, Saul and Uzziah sinned. Samuel told Saul when he, being a king, had meddled with the work of a priest in offering sacrifice, that he had done foolishly and kept not the commandment of the Lord his God. 1 Samuel 13:13. And when Uzziah went into the temple to burn incense upon the altar of incense, Azariah with his brethren withstood him and said unto him, It appertaineth not unto thee, Uzziah, to burn incense unto the Lord, but to the priests that are consecrated to burn incense. Go out of the sanctuary, for thou hast trespassed, neither shall it be for thine honor from the Lord God. 2 Chronicles 26, verses 16 through 18. Number two, no man is called to an office if he has not the fitness and ability for it, for at the least these things are required. Number three, no man is called to any act of office except that which agrees to the commission and order annexed to his office. The magistrate shall not execute judgment without hearing the case, and so forth. So long, then, as I keep myself in my station and do the work that belongs particularly to me in my place, I may comfortably expect the good hand of God, and with cheerfulness I ought to walk in my way and not to afflict my soul with fears and cares. The God that hates presumption in men who thrust themselves into beings too great and weighty does require alacrity in those whom he calls to his service. When he put Joshua into that great office of being a leader to his people, Israel, through the wilderness, he promises to be with them, and often presses this, Only be thou strong and very courageous. Joshua 1, verses 5 through 7 and 9. What should I speak of Moses, Gideon, David, Jeremiah, Paul, and others, in whom you have so many patterns of God's goodness, not leaving his servants in that way which he sets them to walk in? Answer number two. Some things belong to men as partakers of the heavenly calling, as all acts of piety and charity. Yet in these, take this rule. A man is not called to these duties in such a way that they are to be done by any one at any time, in any measure or in any manner, unless we know how to wisely order our ways with discretion. It's not enough to do good, but we must do all according to pattern in due season and in due order. A good work may be marred in the handling when we walk not by rule. When a man neglects his calling and is unseasonable in conference, hearing, fasting, or praying, he cannot upon just ground expect God's assisting presence and blessing in his way, but should expect the contrary. Answer number three. Sometimes a man is called to some extraordinary work, and in this case we find the calling of a man to be of God. Number one, when he has a particular word. Abraham had a particular charge to leave his country and to slay his son in sacrifice. Peter also had a particular word to walk upon the water, and God failed them not. Number two, when he has a strong bent and inclination of heart. Paul was bound in his spirit to go to Jerusalem, even though danger waited for him, Acts 20, verse 22. So it is judged of Ehud in killing Eglon, of Phinehas in slaying Zimri and Cushi. Number three, when God fits not only with a disposition, but with a spirit for the work. When he called Saul to the kingdom, he gave him another spirit. Number four, when he gives peace of heart in their way. It bears them out against all accusations from within or without. Paul and Silas had this testimony of their calling to their work, a spirit of glory resting upon them. Question. But evil men have sometimes a great flush of spirit, courage, ability, peace, and confidence. Do they have this from God? Answer number one. God may employ even wicked men and may, for the service of himself and of his church, fill their sails with a full gale of great gifts and carry them on with a strong hand. So he helped Cyrus, saying of him, "He is my shepherd and shall perform all my pleasure," Isaiah 44, verse 28. And thus saith the Lord to Cyrus, whose right hand I have grasped, Isaiah 45, verse 1. Answer number two, there is a natural strength which may do much. Some have a natural vigor and confidence which enables them to do and suffer much. Answer number three, men's lusts and sinful ends and respects may add activity and vigor to their spirits in good actions. Jehu was zealous, but that flame of zeal was enkindled by the love of the kingdom. And many others do much, but it is by the strength of their self-love and political ends. Answer number four. There is a diabolical power of that prince of the air who works in the children of disobedience to make his own zealots, even as God has his. As Pharaoh's magicians wrought like unto Moses, so Satan transforms himself often into an angel of light. And in a way of seeming piety and devout zeal, he makes many to be valiant champions. But there is this difference between the common assistance of the Spirit of God to evil men, or the strength derived from nature, lusts, or Satan, and that which the Holy Spirit gives to the godly in their ways. Number one, that which is from natural temper, lusts, or Satan is often found in an evil cause. Just as Saul's zeal was madness against the truth before he was called to Christ. Number two, the spirit of holiness only works by love for God. Others work for other ends. Number three, the spirit of holiness only makes more holy by all the assistance which it affords. Only this wins the heart, so that the more God is with him in his way, the more he loves him and loves serving him. It is evident that it is from God because it tends to him. David's heart was filled with love when God appeared to him. Blessed be the Lord, because he hath heard the voice of my supplication. The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusted in him, and I am helped. Therefore my heart greatly rejoiceth, and with my song will I praise him. Psalm 28, verses 6 through 7. Let this suffice for a brief answer of these questions in this digression. Now, let us return to the direction. Be sure you keep in God's way, for you cannot find God except in his own way. When the ark and the pillar of fire, the word, moves before you, walk after it. Then you shall find God pouring in himself and girding your loins with strength. Wait on the Lord and be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Psalm 27, verse 14. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. I, the Lord thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, Fear not, I will help thee. Fear not, thou worm, Jacob, and ye men of Israel. I will help thee, saith the Lord, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Isaiah 41, verses 10 and 13 through 14. It is a precious promise. A man may say and sigh in himself, Alas, the work is great, and I am weak. But God says, I will strengthen you and help you. And if the difficulty is too great for you, yet it is not too great for me. But a man may say, Alas, they that war against me are many and great, and I cannot stand before them. I find mighty lusts, strong disputes, and strong temptations. But see what God says. They that strive with thee shall perish. They that war against thee shall be as nothing and as a thing of naught. Isaiah 41, verses 11 through 12. They may come against you, but you will be above them. They shall vanish. They are no more than a shadow. But a man may say, I find my heart shaking at the sight of these sons of Anak, and I am ready to say in myself that I shall one day fall by the hands of Saul. To this God answers. Number one, by repulsing fear through a word of encouragement. Fear not, nor be dismayed, Joshua 10, verse 25, in which he repeats again and again. Number two, by iteration of the promise. I will help. I will help. I will also strengthen thee. I will hold thy right hand, Isaiah 41, verse 10. This is as he had said, I will surely do it. Number three, by calling in his attributes as witnesses and assurances. I am Jehovah, one who is, and will give being to all my words. I am the Holy One, one that cannot deceive you. Number four, by pleading his relation and affection. I am thy God. I am Jehovah, thy God, thy Redeemer. Isaiah 48, verse 17. This is as if he had said, I have given myself to you and have undertaken to save you. Therefore, fear not. Though you are but a worm, Jacob, yet will I uphold thee. Oh, then what we could now rejoice, or oh, then that we could now rejoice in our way and say as the prophet, The Lord Jehovah will help me. Therefore, shall I not be confounded? Isaiah 50, verse 7. Chapter 24, the sixth and seventh means of retaining God's quickening presence are to be up and doing his revealed will and to diligently use the means of grace. Be doing. Many cry, Lord, help, but do not stir up themselves, thinking to live all upon supply from heaven. But if you keep the seed in the garden, God will not increase your store. You must plow and sow, and in your endeavors look for the blessing from above. You have a life in you, and you must put it forth. God has said he will help you. You must do what you can. And he then will join with you, for he has said he will meet you, Isaiah 64, verse 5. He expects that you should be coming, and then he will come. The mother will lead the child by the hand, but the child must use his legs. He will do as men do with young swimmers. He will hold your head, but you must use your limbs. I shall speak more of this when I come to speak of such as seem to be deserted of God, but are not. That will be in chapter 30. They find a deadness, but it is not because God will not co-work with them, but because they do not co-work with him. I will at present only say what David said to Solomon his son. Arise, therefore, and be doing, and the Lord be with thee. 1 Chronicles 22, verse 16. I'm going to interject for a second and say this is not God saying, or someone saying, God only helps those that help themselves. I know that's a real popular comment among people in the world today, and it probably was the same then, but this is not what Joseph Simmons is saying to the reader. And I will repeat it again. Arise, therefore, and be doing, and the Lord be with thee. 1 Chronicles 22, verse 16. Do not sit weeping and sighing, for that will not profit. You must be doing. Wisely and diligently improve the means of grace, for God ordinarily works only in them and by them where they are afforded. He has shown you the way of life. If you walk not in his counsels, it is no wonder if deadness and deformity of spirit overtakes you. Having spoken somewhat of this before, I will here add these two things: the faults of men in the use of the means, and the inducements to use them rightly. Number one, there is often a faultiness in the godly in the use of the means which weakens them and takes off their vigor. Letter A, profaneness. When men come with a slight and common spirit to these holy things, without due composedness, reverence, and preparedness, this is to provoke God to forsake his sanctuary and to leave his ordinances unclothed of their usual working power and quickening virtue, for this is not service that he can bear. It overthrows his majesty and lays his humor low when men come so before him. If I be a father, where is mine honor? Malachi 1 verse 6. It is as if God had said, your unholy and contemptible carriage and my worship declares that you set light by me and make nothing of me. If you had me in esteem as your God, you would worship me as God. Let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. Hebrews 12, verse 28. Letter B, confidence misplaced. God will not bear it when you put your trust in the minister, his grace, or his gifts, graces, prayers, or the things that he administers. Remember that gifts and ordinances, though they are ordained for edification, yet they are but instruments, and the whole force of the instrument depends upon the chief agent. That's like a guitar player being able to play his instrument. The waters of Bethesda do not heal unless the angel moves them. Neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. 1 Corinthians 3, verse 7. God has not appointed these things without which he could not work, but because it pleased him. Out of liberty, he conveys himself in a way suitable to nature, the word and sacraments being fit things to deal with intelligent and rational creatures. Through the ordinances, he also ordained that his name might be more honored in the fellowship of many. Therefore, our trust must not be in them, but in God. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 5. Letter C. Men do not come to the means for their proper end. As the empty spirits of unchanged men gather the chaff and cockle, but let go of the wheat, preferring a fine wheat before the ears of corn, so many that are good do catch these or at things less useful. For the most part, men have what they seek and no more. In a field, one comes to get the wood, another to pick the flowers, another to take air, while the sheep come to get food. There is a spirit among some men who are too much carried after difficulties, novelties, depths, and disputes, and by this means they come to be like sick children with swelled heads, but weak limbs, and little strength. This should be your end: to get life, to meet God, to be filled with the Spirit. You may be fatted in gifts, but lean in grace, like a tree full of leaves and branches, but empty of fruit. Knowledge is good when it is sought to a due end, not to set up yourselves above others, but to set up God. It is good to count nothing as good to you until you find God in it. 1,000 notions are but vanities, and as empty clouds in the air, unless they dissolve themselves in showers of grace and holiness upon the heart. As newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the word, that you may grow thereby. 1 Peter 2, verse 2. Letter D. Men do not use the means in faith. They are ready to say as Naaman, "What are the waters of Jordan?" 2 Kings 5, verses 1 through 14. Unless you believe, you shall not see the power of God. When you say in their hearts, "My heart is corrupt, dead, dark, and past cure." That's total depravity. What is this but to charge God with weakness and folly in appointing these helps that cannot profit? Though lusts and temptations may be many and strong, yet remember, God is able to deliver you. In other words, don't use excuses. Don't make excuses like, "Well, I'm totally depraved, I can't do it." You know, just do it. Don't make excuses. God is able to deliver you. Okay? Letter E. Not drawing out the efficacy of the means by prayer, application, and meditation. You should hear for the hereafter. The word should remain upon you, and you should mold and form your hearts to it and by it. The benefit of the ordinances does not always come immediately, but are like grapes that must be pressed. What encouragement does God give oftentimes? If you were wise, you might get much. Does not God sometimes present them like flowing breasts? Now, if you would lie sucking, how might you be filled? You put from you the word when it is like a mine not half broken up. Yea, often when you are near to the springs of life, you cease to dig. The diligent hand makes one rich. A hungry soul finds many sweet meals among your leftovers. God would give much of himself if you would stay by it. If nothing comes at present, do with the ordinances as with a pump. Continue at it, and the waters will flow. It is not much hearing, but wise hearing that carries the blessing. The word must be laid up and must soak into your heart. John 8, verse 37. Number two, let me add a little for inducement to put you upon seeking God in this way. Letter A, consider that it is God's way. Therefore, you must not expect good without it. It is his way, and he will make it good. He has appointed the means for this end, and therefore they shall prosper that use them. His power, wisdom, and goodness all stand inviting you, being as so many seals of this truth, that they shall live that hear. And they say to you, "O thou that art named the house of Jacob, is the Spirit of the Lord straitened? Are these his doings? Do not my words do good to them that walk uprightly?" That's Micah 2, verse 7. Letter B. His promise is with you. How fully has he expressed himself in this? "Incline your ear and come unto me. Hear, and your soul shall live." Isaiah 55, verses 1 through 3. And has not Christ annexed his presence to his ordinances for his people's good unto the end of the world? Matthew 28, verse 20. Let me say that again so that you Arminians can understand it. And has not Christ annexed his presence to his ordinances for his people's good unto the end of the world? That's Matthew 28, verse 20. Look then at the ordinances and the promise, and see how God has engaged himself unto his servants. If you could believe, you would seek God more in his sanctuary. But as it is said, Christ wrought no more miracles in his own country because of their unbelief. Matthew 13, verse 58. Therefore, God shuts his power from working because your heart is shut up in unbelief. You should go with gladness to the house of God, as to a place of feeding and healing, and rejoice in the hope of finding an effusion of the Spirit from on high, according to the promise. Letter C. God has done it. You can see that by these means he prevails upon men and turns from darkness to light, and raises from death to life. You see how others flourish in the courts of God's house as trees by the waterside. And have you not yourselves found God often causing the ordinances to come as ships laden with rich treasures for you? Have not your hearts burned when you have heard him speaking? Have not some sermons been as Elijah's chariot? Has not Christ come often when his disciples have been together? Why do you not then, upon such experiences, walk diligently and cheerfully in the gospel? Letter D. It is God's glory to meet his people. It sets out his goodness, wisdom, power, mercy, and faithfulness as the noonday sun, and makes his name precious, his ways sweet, and his people fruitful, as Christ has said, "Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bring forth much fruit." John 15, verse 8. Therefore you have cause to seek to enjoy God in this way. Letter E. Consider with whom you have to deal. God knows who truly seeks him. He knows who his friends are, and sees all the readings of your heart, or all the reachings of your heart, after him. Christ asked the woman whom she sought, but he knew she sought him, and so showed himself unto her. The child may seek the mother, and she may be ignorant of it, but there is not a prayer, not a sigh after him, but it is in his ear, not a tear for him, but it is in his eye. He can do what you desire. He can carry you on as upon eagle's wings. He is a fountain of life and has enough for you and for thousands. He has pity. He is sensible of your case. He knows your need of him. What weakness you are left in if he is not with you. What temptations and lusts break in. What sorrow and heaviness if you enjoy him not. He is the author of that desire which you have after him. God knows the meaning of his own spirit. These desires he sent from himself to be as Pharaoh's chariots bringing Jacob to Joseph. And when they have brought you to God, will he not accept you? He would not have sent for you if he did not intend to help you. Therefore, seek him with faith and diligence in the means, that you may have his presence for your guide and guard all your ways.